Welcome to Kjellander & Björk and our podcast where we have conversations with leaders, thinkers and creators about the future. We usually have our conversations in Swedish. This is one of our English episodes. Can countries become BFFs? Well, we're not sure, but sovereign states can surely share values, ambitions, goals, ways of life, and invest in each other's endeavors. This is very true, we think, when it comes to the US. Relations between the United States and Sweden are built on shared heritage that dates back to 1638, when the first Swedish immigrants arrived on the shores of Delaware. Sweden was actually one of the first countries to recognize US independence back in 1783, and one could say that we've been buddies ever since. And that's a big deal, to be to the point. We invest over $94 billion in each other's economies, and this is a growing and super important business for both of us. A trusted relation that needs continuously support, organization, nurturing, and work. So today we're talking to Peter Dallin. And Peter is the managing director of AmCham, the American Chamber of Commerce in Sweden. And we got to ask him a lot of questions about this long-going relationship. What's the job? Why is Sweden important? Is Sweden important? And how does the transatlantic economy work? And of course, what might happen in the future? This was a conversation that could have lasted a long time, because when we start looking at our bond, it's obvious that we share a lot more than important trade agreements. We give you Peter Dallin. Welcome to our podcast, Peter.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
How's your day been?
So far, it's been a blur of activity. All good, though.
All right, anything you want to share?
No, I mean, it's just kind of the normal day. I think right now we're like keen on planning for Almedalen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that today.
So could you onboard the listeners and us about a bit about you and about what you do here?
Yeah, so I'm Peter Dallin. I'm the managing director of the American Chamber of Commerce in Sweden, otherwise known as AmCham Sweden. There are about 120 AmChams all around the world. Mm-hmm. They are all certified by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C., but they're not owned by the U.S. Chamber. So we're all independent organizations. So in Sweden, we're an idealförening that's owned by our member companies who pay dues to be members of AmCham.
Yeah.
And what sets us apart from other chambers of commerce in Sweden is that we are totally bilaterally focused. Our mission is to promote Swedish-U.S. trade and investment and U.S. commercial interests in Sweden.
Cool.
We're the only trade association in Sweden that represents U.S. businesses.
That's cool. So you're not non-profit then?
A non-profit, yeah, right, yes.
Yeah. And I guess we read up on members, but there's quite a lot of members.
Yeah, we have 180 members.
Yeah.
And I should say, rephrase that, like we are the only trade association in Sweden representing U.S. business interests exclusively. So there are other trade associations in which our members participate, like industry-specific ones, but ours is industry-wide.
How do one like fall into Chamber of Commerce direction? How did you end up here?
Well, I wound up in Sweden because of my Swedish wife.
Yeah.
And I was here for a number of years. I started doing in-house counsel work for an internet startup company, and then I worked for a number of years for a group of American and British lawyers in Sweden. Right. And about 8 years ago, I was recruited to run the American Chamber of Commerce in Sweden.
So, and we noticed an interesting aspect also of your history that I'm sure you hear a lot. It's the time that you worked for Senator Biden, I guess it was back then.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I worked for then Senator Biden in starting in 1996 on his Senate reelection campaign back in Delaware, where I'm from, and wound up going then with him to his office in Washington and serving as a counsel on his Senate Judiciary Committee staff until 2001, when I moved to Sweden with my now Swedish wife.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, you know, basically working for the American Chamber of Commerce is about the most fun I've had since working for him. I mean, you get, when you talk about just being a curious individual,
right.
I mean, the amount of information and the amount of issues that you get to deal with as a Senate staffer or in my role today, it's there are myriad and many.
What was it like working for Biden? How does he like his coffee in the morning? Yeah.
So yeah, it's intense working for him. Then yeah, one of the pro tips I got early on from my colleagues was when you're waiting for him at a committee meeting,
right.
or executive meeting with the Judiciary Committee, and he's just coming in from the train from Wilmington, make sure he's got a cup of black coffee, black coffee in front of him. Otherwise, he's not a guy who would ever ask you to get him coffee or anything like that. In fact, if you were to ask him back in the day to like carry his briefcase or something, like helping him out of a car, he'd be like, no, I carry my own briefcase. You know, he is Joe from Delaware, Joe from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And he's like that wherever he is, whether he's as president or when you see him in the hardware shop back where I'm from.
It kind of makes it through the screen as well. That's my impression as well, looking at him at the TV now. He feels like a commoner, but in a good sense, I guess. That's the portrayal I get from him. So
he's always tried to keep things, I think, really real. Even he's been a senator in public life since he was 30.
Yeah. Quite a long career, I guess. So you mentioned another word there, Delaware. When we did research and looking at you, Andreas, we actually saw that 1638, a Swedish ship landed on the harbor, I guess, or beach in Delaware. So the connection between Sweden and your state, your home state, goes a quite long time.
Yeah, it's centuries long, and that the Kalmar Nickel. That's the ship, and it landed at a place that we call the Rocks.
Yeah,
there's a Carl Miele sculpture there, which has a double in the port of Gothenburg, so celebrating the connection between Sweden and the U.S. And that's one of my early stops when I with my now wife. I took her to visit the Rocks.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was like for a short period of time, if you know your history, because we also had the Mayflower coming over, the Dutch people come in and take over.
Yeah, it didn't last long.
No, it didn't last long. I think we had a 12-year-old queen back then.
Yeah,
Christina. Yeah, that was cool.
But it's left its mark. I mean, the it's still called it's Fort Christina. It's a national park. It's kind of in a sort of dodgy area of town now. It's starting to get more gentrified, but it's just down the street from where the Kalmar Nickel, the tall ship Kalmar Nickel is today.
And it's interesting because our shared heritage is even stronger than that. If we go to the, I think it was 1850s or something, like with the crop failures and stuff going on in Sweden. I read something that I think 5 million people in the U.S. have a Swedish heritage. Today, we have these shows on Swedish television, like Allt för Sverige. Have you seen it?
No, yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah. And my family, we're part of that.
Oh, you are?
That wave of immigrants. Mm. So my last name, Dahlin, doesn't come from roots in New Sweden, but from Minnesota.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's Minnesota is the place that I think of when I think of New Sweden, I guess. And is it five? I've heard it was more, actually.
I think it's five, because I believe that it was around a third of the Swedish population that emigrated from like the 1850s to the 19...
something.
20s, 30s, yeah. 1.3 million Swedes emigrated.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you look at looking into your job again, you mentioned that you've had a lot of fun working for Biden, and you have as much fun now because it's a really broad field. Just guessing, I mean, there must be every type of industry and every type of leadership and a lot of questions. What's a typical day for you at the AmCham?
Well, a day can start with, a breakfast roundtable. So tomorrow morning we'll have a breakfast roundtable with the governor of Indiana, talking about, what makes it attractive to do business in Indiana.
Yeah.
And, so I'll learn a lot about Indiana. I've not been to Indiana. Yeah. My grandfather was from Indianapolis. But so for me, it's interesting from that perspective. And then, you bring the Swedish investors in the room, the companies interested in the U.S., and you hear what they find attractive about the U.S., which helps us in terms of helping us to make the case for the larger Swedish-American business community when they're talking about Sweden abroad and explaining it to people back in the U.S. or in the EMEA management groups about why companies should invest in or invest more in Sweden, then helps us to make the case for what makes Sweden innovative.
And it's really some substantial numbers if we look and dig into them. I noticed here that Sweden and the U.S. invest over 94 billion in each other's economies, and that Sweden is the 13th largest investor in the U.S. and one of the largest investors on a per capita basis.
Yeah, it's really impressive, especially given the size of Sweden, the impact it has on the U.S. market. And depending on which reports you look at, the number of jobs tied to Swedish companies, both whether it's direct employment, which is what we have in our transatlantic economy report, or the broader report from Team Sweden, which incorporates jobs that are, from the supply chain, which is, hundreds of thousands of jobs.
It's really interesting. I think it might be, I'm just guessing, but it feels in some sort that we're quite close cultural-wise, even if there's a divide, of course. There's an American way and there's a Swedish way of doing things. But, in terms of values and culture and stuff like that, do you think that plays a part in it?
Oh, yes. I definitely think it plays a part. And now more than ever. I mean, I find myself often saying this now more than ever, where it's important to, come together on trade issues. But really it is. I think the war in Ukraine has, I think, brought things into stark contrast about autocracy versus democracy, and about the values that do unite Sweden and the U.S., the EU and the U.S., or the West generally, Canada, North America, Japan, and elsewhere. And those values, I think, play an important role, and especially when we're talking about innovating for the future and data flows. There are differences, between the way that America deals with privacy and the EU deals with privacy, but the differences aren't fundamental. They are regulatory and legal, because at the bottom base level, everybody values privacy in the United States and in Sweden and in the EU. It's just a question of how to strike the right balance. And I think it's really important that the EU and the US do that, to set the rules for global trade and data, and all global trade for that matter, for the future.
Definitely. And looking at the numbers, I mean, there's definitely a consensus, I think, that we need to overcome these differences to improve even more.
Yeah, but I think just thinking a bit about it, the new framework, the new deal,
the data privacy, the transatlantic data privacy framework.
Just thinking a bit about some buckets of things that have happened. So we have the EU digital market and digital services act that kind of set a good playing field to have the conversations in more detail, which led to, for me, thinking about it, the framework that Biden addressed. I don't know, it's 2 months ago. I think these are this is a perfect playground to get more value from these data streams without losing the integrity of us people, I guess. That's have I interpreted it right or
is, no? I think that it is. I think you're right. I think there we are in a place where we can have conversations now, and I think one of the most important outcomes of the June 2021 EU-US summit, I think, was the development of the Trade and Technology Council, which is soon going to have its second meeting. And if it's successful, and I don't see any reason from the outside looking in why it won't be successful, it could lead to a long-term sort of platform for dialogue between the EU and the US on all things trade and technology related, and a place to hammer out like how a DSA or DMA might work in the US, with Brussels sort of leading on that. And the GDPR is a good example, I think, with some states in the US, notably California, adopting similar legislation. So we'll have to see how it develops.
One of the companies that were really fast to comment on this data privacy framework was Google, and they actually said that this is a baseline for us now. It feels really good, but we're going for the ceiling, and they understand how they can also make all these great services that at the same time protect individual privacy as well as address national security concerns. So balancing this balances interests in a good way.
Is this conversations that you can have with your members? Is it complicated to have them, or is it on the agenda?
It's complicated, especially when you get into the legal nitty-gritty about, you know, how you enforce the new framework in the US, like through an executive order and things like that. It can get complicated pretty quickly, but I think that there's pretty broad agreement among all companies about, you know, trust is key. People have to trust the platforms, people have to trust each other. It's and they understand that to drive future value and growth, the customers need to trust them.
Yeah.
So I think those parts of the conversation, they're easy. Then it's the harder thing is, how do you regulate and legislate in such a way that it doesn't kill innovation?
Yeah. Yeah. Because that is an interesting topic. And I'm not sure that we're going to straighten it out all in every part of it. But one way of looking at EU, and when we talk about it, Andreas, we talk about EU as a peace project, and we compare. And when we compare it to the US, we see the US more like a market product. And this is not true, but if you start thinking about it like that, it kind of makes sense why the EU has they jump into regulation. This is my opinion of the EU, and we do it because of we think of it as a peace project, and I feel that the innovation platform, you as an innovation platform, is more free. You're hesitant to go into early regulations before you understand the full values and the full problems that comes with some new ideas, and that's just two players interpreting, have a bit of difference in interpreting innovation. Am I on the same workshop?
Yeah, no, I think that I have a similar view of things. Like the EU tends to regulate from the top down, and the US not quite from the bottom up. It's a different construct, right? We have a federal system. The federal government has very limited enumerated powers, with some wiggle room under the Commerce Clause. But talk about complicated the case law around the Commerce Clause. That's complicated. But you know, mostly it's the states that set the rules for most things. We have these 50 different laboratories.
Yeah.
And the state that has the best laws in any particular area or regulations and succeeds, other states are going to emulate that.
Right.
Often it's California when it comes to like environmental regulations so on and so forth.
Totally makes sense. And that's a better way to describe it than I tried. I just need to comment one more time. The organ that regulates internet, is it called FCC
The Federal Communications Commission.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the I think it might be the general manager of FCC some years back when we talked a lot about the internet at that time. It was early on. And I know he said something along these lines. I think it's too early to start toying what might be the fuel, the engine of the next generation economy. And I feel that is very much the U.S. mentality of looking at innovation. And comparing to you, I haven't really seen that type of quotes. There's some other thinking going on in the EU in terms of the future economy, I guess.
Yeah, I think from the U.S. perspective, there can be some legislators or some parties that want to take a more pro-regulatory approach right. than others. But for some reason, and it hasn't been really nailed down, like the U.S. tends to have a great deal of innovation. What the secret sauce is, I don't know. But part of it's got to be a different approach to regulation yeah. in the various states, and that the successful models are emulated.
Yeah,
but right. there can be issues too. I mean, one example I can think of from 20 years ago was a piece of legislation. It was called the Wire Act, which right. regulated like transferring data on copper wires.
Oh, yeah.
So if you weren't doing it on copper wires, then the regulations didn't capture you.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's when you make legislation, you know, it's often compared to making sausage. It's like messy and
it's hard work.
Yeah, it's hard work. And you don't want to be so specific that you eliminate other options, or so specific that you create giant loopholes.
Yeah.
So you don't want to hamper innovation.
No. Yeah. Well, one word there, Peter, that I pick up is trust. Mm-hmm. And even already in his inauguration speech, President Biden was calling for unity and truth, and like what I believe is the fundamentals of trust. And I think he also showed this in the early days in his office. He was like really slowing down, taking a pause. Mm-hmm. There was like this moment of silence, and then starting to build up this trust, taking up all these international connections again. I know that Biden was in Brussels when they signed this, yeah. Also data privacy. What has been expected since you worked for Biden back then? What you have been expected and unexpected in terms of how he is and how he acts right now, you think?
Well,
it's a hard question, perhaps.
Yeah, there probably are some things that I didn't expect, but I think mostly it's met my expectations. Mm. I mean, he's a transatlanticist, if that's
yeah.
a word,
yeah. Yeah.
And he always has been. He believes in the EU-US relationship, and he lives and breathes the values that he preaches. I mean, they animate every aspect of his life. Mm. He is like a deeply religious man, a family man, and a public servant in like the truest meaning of the mm. word. He doesn't always, you know, wear his religion on his sleeves like some other politicians mm. might. But yeah, he's a man of like deeply held convictions and fundamental values. So I can't say I've been really surprised by many of the things he's done. Some things, you know, in politics that the play of politics will force you to make decisions that might be unexpected. But
yeah.
overall, it doesn't surprise me at all that he moved quickly to shore up trust with yeah. with the EU and yeah. also within the US and with public institutions. I mean, trust is fundamental to everything. It's fundamental to our personal relationships, yeah. it's fundamental to our work relationships, it's fundamental to our civic relationships with one another as citizens of Sweden or citizens of the US or citizens of the world, that we trust our institutions, and it's fundamental to business, fundamental to democracy.
Yeah,
but definitely. And my view there, I think he does a good job in restoring this international trust.
Yeah.
Because I think also from the Europe perspective, there's also been this it's flipped a bit, you know, since we had Obama and then we had Trump and we had the America First policy and now Biden. I think some people have also referred to Biden, I think that's Obama 2.0. So I think for the long term, this trust is really, really important, and to get these frameworks working.
How would you rate the trust now? What has been your view on the trust index between us?
I would say I'm surprised by the speed at which some things have gotten done, because I thought that it might take longer to restore some of the trust that had been eroded over the past few years. But yeah, it's hard to rate it. I'd say I'm pleasantly surprised with the progress that's been made, both with the EU and the US, but in the Western Alliance generally, and international institutions, and the way that President Biden and his counterparts in Europe, his partners in Europe in this, because it's not a one-sided equation. You have to have trusted interlocutors wherever you are.
And
he's a trusted interlocutor in the White House, and same with his team.
Yeah.
So this is, if you look into trust between companies, we saw something, did some research, and we see that American companies trust Swedish companies and vice versa. How is that your job? Is it you who's creating this? alone?
Don't be shy.
No, I mean, we are like the vehicle for like what our members do.
And
we have members, both Swedish companies who are members and American companies who are members. And they are like, in many cases, like the leading actors in their fields.
Yeah.
And they do amazing, innovative things every day. What we do is create platforms for them to connect with each other and other businesses outside of their normal fields, and also policymakers. So we just follow our members' leads. I'm a intellectual property lawyer from Washington.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I quickly get out of my depth talking about, you know, data or, you know, life science, but we have so many experts in our, in and among our membership that can give true insights and expertise into every sort of issue impacting us today, whether it is in healthcare or sustainability or digitalization.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky to be able to draw on them. And on our best days are when we're actually putting people together and we learn about successes, or we hear from a member that, hey, you gave me some information that was super helpful that I could act on that helped me solve a problem.
Mm. Right. But I'm guessing there's some kind of insight that you and your team might get, and that is, I mean, because you observe Sweden and you observe America or the U.S. companies, and there might be knowledge that you can pass on to each other. So if you, for instance, look at Sweden, could you learn Sweden something in terms of business? I know this is a strange question, and vice versa. What's the patterns you're seeing? Is it anything that we can take from the US and put in Sweden, get things working better?
That's a hard question.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Swedish business is so like innovative and powerful. I mean, there are not many other countries in the world of 10 million people that have their own, like, you know, fighter plane. Like, I don't think there's any other.
And might not be.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, that's just one example. When people ask us about like doing business in the US, like what is important for Swedes to know, maybe is, I don't know, like, don't hide your light. You know, Swedish companies, Swedish people do amazing things. Don't be afraid to brag a little about it, because otherwise people aren't going to hear about it.
Yeah.
And then I guess that would be the thing I would take from the US here. And the thing about Sweden that would benefit the US is, well, I'm a big fan of education, and I think making education as available as it is in Sweden to everybody in the United States would help the U.S. immensely.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's so exciting subject. We don't have to go into everything, but the link there between trade and education as well, I think it's really interesting. So
yeah, just thinking about trade as something complex,
definitely,
which it is, then having yourself educated might increase the opportunities and see the angles, I guess.
Yeah, certainly. So, mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the strongest selling points for Sweden when you think about like why do companies want to invest here. It's an innovative environment.
Yeah.
There's a strong rule of law. It's transparent. Excellent, educated, highly skilled workforce. So it ticks a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
Well, we got compliments, I guess, then. that's what we were aiming for, of course, Peter. So if we look ahead a bit, what might trade become? And I know we won't solve that in this conversation, but if we look ahead, for instance, we've been reading your excellent report, The Transatlantic Economy 2022 and Further, and we see astonishing numbers of how much is created by trade today. It's $7 trillion in between the US and Europe. But if we look ahead, what might trade become? Do you see any patterns, some markets that it's evolving or?
Well, the area where it seems to be growing the fastest is in digital services. And that, I guess that will continue. Mm-hmm. But there's other opportunity as well when it comes to solutions for climate change, sustainable solutions and energy, green energy. Sweden's doing amazing things when it comes to, hydrogen-based steel and other sustainable solutions to problems that plague everybody, and including, municipalities and states that could benefit from, the innovation coming out of Sweden. Just to name a couple of things, I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, and to use the metaphor of the one of the two authors of the report, Joe Quinlan. Mm-hmm. It's written by Joe Quinlan and Dan Hamilton, who write this report every year for AmCham EU and the U.S. Chamber, and we're proud to be a co-sponsor of it. But so when we released this on March 24th in Brussels, Joe Quinlan talked about singles. Use the baseball analogy. I don't know if that will work on this podcast.
Yeah.
But hitting singles instead of going for a home run, like the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership TTIP was a home run. Yeah. So he said, let's go for singles. Let's get a new framework for Privacy Shield. And that happened the next day. So that's good. So the next things are, maybe singles we can hit in other regulatory issues, safety testing for car bumpers. I don't know. Yes. There's a long list of these things that could easily be, more easily than not help. What's the word I'm looking for? Harmonized so that you don't have to go through two layers of regulatory testing, one in the EU and then again in the US to smooth out rough spots in trade.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of thoughts hearing you talk. I understood the reference, by the way. So and hopefully the audience do. This totally makes sense for a lot of things we've been talking about, Andreas. Because when we usually look at operations and businesses, we tend to see that complexity arises for everyone. And one way of practicing better, to succeeding better, is actually to iterate instead of doing whole complete packages of produce. Because if it takes time to produce something, a complete package of something, the world tends to have changed until you deliver the package. So when you say singles, I think of doing these in increments, so it can easily be checked off and worked on, instead of trying to make a super big deal, which perhaps not might be relevant once it's released. So am I getting reference right then?
No, I think that's totally right. Like, because if you look at TTIP as an example, there were chapters of it that were, done.
Yeah, right.
And then other parts of it that just jammed the whole thing up, and then it lost momentum.
Yeah.
And So I think it's important to do, let's fix the stuff we agree on, and then like we sit down and do the harder work of the ironing out the differences where the disagreements are deeper.
Yeah.
And I don't think there might be, this is just me guessing, of course, but I don't know if that's going to be a practice again, doing these whole packages again, because I don't see the complexity being lesser going forward, rather on the other end, I guess.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any appetite for it. I've not heard many people advocating for it. There has been some rising talk about, you know, let's go back to have another TTIP, let's try it again. But most experts I hear just sort of bat that down right away and say, no, let's just...
It's really promising, because given that if we do it better by doing singles, we're going to evolve a lot of markets and opportunities simultaneously. I don't know if I'd get that right. Yeah.
Perfect.
In some sense. So it's promising. But what more? And the challenges, if you look ahead at trade at this point.
There's a lot of challenges. I think the main one being trust issues, residual trust issues, which is why I think it's important to have some of these easier victories so we can tackle the thornier problems. And I think part of that will be seeing what is this framework that was released in March for the new privacy shield. What does it actually look like, and how's it going to work in practice?
Exactly. And if we skip ahead many more years ahead in the future, looking at trade with this future lens of virtual goods and not leaving all this raw material
and commodities
and instead look at skins in Fortnite and other games, what do you see? Obviously this framework will be significant in the information exchange that we have, since so many our economy is dependent on it. What challenges and opportunities do you see further ahead?
Well, within that framework, like the metaverse.
Yeah,
great, perfect.
That's, I don't know. It's going to be difficult to regulate. There's aspects of it, dealing with AI, which is another big, legislative, I would say kind of juggernaut coming, with the EU legislation on AI. And this is something I haven't gotten my head around yet, but if we think that data privacy is complex, this is a whole other layer or a whole other, we have to come up with another word because it's beyond complex, I think. And I don't know. I think there's still going to be room in the economy for physical goods. That one promising thing, especially from a US-Swedish perspective, is advanced manufacturing and the innovative companies in Sweden and in the US who are doing that. So maybe it won't require container shipping across the Atlantic. Then you could
it's just the blueprint.
And then you build the widget or whatever, either at your home using your own printer or at a communal center that serves as a distribution point for shipped goods or
definitely.
Printed goods.
And it's, I think, because a guest that we had on our show, Sam Rihani, who's a country manager for Meta, Facebook, their vision is also moving into the metaverse. If we continue the metaverse example, how important it is to co-create this environment together. And also back to the conversation with, we're not single players here anymore. This must be built jointly by many, many partners, many actors.
Exactly. We just did a program with Meta on the metaverse, a brown bag lunch and learn, part of a series that we do just about a month ago. So I think it's a world of opportunity, and but I don't think I could predict with any accuracy what's going to happen next.
Because we wanted to get some quote from you and then get back to a conversation with you in 5 years to see how it played out. No, it's impossible.
That's intimidating.
I have another. Actually, it's a quote, and I was thinking: will this fit into the conversation? I found this quote from the French philosopher Montesquieu, and he wrote this back in the 18th century. Commerce is a cure for the most destructive prejudices, for it is almost a general rule that wherever we find agreeable manners, commerce flourishes, and that wherever there is commerce, there we meet with agreeable manners. And he was referring to, I think, the role international trade plays for peace and tolerance, and that's feels like a really important thing if we look at the world today, I think. And also the shared heritage that Sweden has with the US, going back since we've been partners in trade for so many years, that's why we tolerate each other, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the centuries of tradition and cultural and personal ties between Sweden and the United States. So I think that's super valuable, invaluable. Mm. And then Sweden was the first country to recognize, or the first country that was not involved in the war for independence to recognize the United States.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So
oh, yes.
Entered into what's called the Treaty of Amity and Commerce in 1783.
Oh. I didn't know that.
The U.S. ambassador to Sweden was Benjamin Franklin, who was based in Paris.
Right.
The signatory from Sweden was, I'm going to space on his last name. Maybe we can come back to that.
Yeah.
But anyways, so Sweden has a long tradition of trade with the U.S. And I do believe that, and I've heard many sort of iterations of the Montesquieu quote, that, you know, trade being a peace project. And it's hard to, have ill feelings towards people that you work with.
Yeah.
Which gets back to like what's it going to be like when if it's all virtual versus like in person? I think there's going to continue to have to be some component of having people actually travel back and forth and meet people in real life. And at least until like the virtual experience becomes more tangible, if that's the right word for it. But I think it won't hurt that it's easier to do things online, whether, you know, it's on Teams or Google Meet or Zoom or in the metaverse.
Yeah.
These things are all positive to connect people.
Great answer, by the way. And love the quote, Andreas. I like that you worked it into the conversation. Heading into some final questions, before we do that, could you... Is it anything, to those who listens now, Peter, is it anything that you could say about AmCham and what you're doing more to facilitate the trade and relations and what's cooking? If someone who isn't a member is listening, what should they do?
Well, they should join.
Yeah.
That's amcham.se/join.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're welcome to call me and I'll talk to them about the value proposition. Mm-hmm. But so, as I mentioned at the outset, you know, we are, our role is precisely to connect Swedish and American businesses and to promote U.S. business in Sweden. And we're the only trade association in Sweden that does that for U.S. business. And what that means on any particular day is that, you know, we create platforms for knowledge sharing and networking and policy shaping. Generally speaking, networking comes along with all of it. Mm. Sometimes the networking is at a breakfast where you're hearing from a thought leader and sitting next to somebody from another industry or in another company that you don't know, which provokes conversations and thoughts and curiosity, as well as the inspiration from like leading thought leaders on whichever topic of the day it is, whether it's management or sustainability or life science or digitalization or governance. You know, we bring in leading speakers from Sweden and from around the world. And then, you know, you get the opportunity to meet people you might not otherwise meet.
Yeah.
So you expand your network, expand your knowledge. And then on top of that, we have the policy shaping platforms. So when we have to have conversations about, hiccups in the relationship, like whether it's the public procurement of cloud services, which has been an issue here for a few years. You know, it's important for us that we are a trusted partner so that we can talk with our interlocutors in the Swedish government and the U.S. government and say this is what the pain points are for American investors and in Sweden or foreign investors in Sweden when it comes to cloud services, and be seen as a trusted partner in that conversation.
Totally sounds like you have a great job. Hard, but great.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So the biggest challenge is time.
Yeah.
So we have closing question that we ask to all our guests in 2022. And we, Mats and I, we figured that this decade will be filled with the innovation and digitization. We talked about that with tech and various forms of sustainability and climate work. But we are also curious here about what more qualities that will become important in the coming years. So that said, what characteristics, if you will, do you think is important to consider in this decade?
Yeah, so I think right now, and hopefully it will become less important in the years ahead, but I think right now it's really important that when we're talking about innovation and digitalization and sustainability and climate work, that we couch that conversation in a conversation about trust and values. Because you can't have, you know, sustainability. In fact, one of the projects that we're engaged in is called Tillsammans mot Corruption, together with the Swedish Anti-Bribery and Corruption Institute and Transparency International Sweden. We've been doing this for a number of years. And for the last couple of years, we've been talking about what we call goal zero in relation to the UN Sustainability Development Goals, that you can't hit any of the other goals if you don't fight corruption. And I think now it's more important than ever to talk about these things. And this is, you know, one of the strengths of the Swedish U.S. relationship, the EU-U.S. relationship, is that we are like strong supporters of the rule of law, of democracy, of a free and independent press, and, you know, fighting corruption. And I think we need to talk about that more and champion that while we're talking about all these other things, because they won't happen. Innovation is not going to happen in an autocracy.
No. Oh, that's a great answer.
I need to react. I see it when you talk about it that way. I see it as an accelerator. That's like what can make it happen faster, given that we get higher in trust and higher, and we understand each other's values. And I mean, so it's the soft stuff is gonna solve the hard stuff. I guess that's what I took from your answer here.
I think that's a fair interpretation.
Yeah,
I hope I'm right.
Yeah, but I'm on your team on that answer as well. So
Peter, it's been great talking to you.
So, thank you for having me.
It's been a lot of fun.
And we'll get back to you in a few years to see if you're right in all the predictions that we had today. Let's see where it comes along.
I'd be delighted to come back. So,
thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening in on Peter, Mats, and me. I hope this started some new thoughts for you, because whatever you do in work or life, you will have some sort of relations with the U.S. If you're more interested in our business relationships with the US, be sure to check in on our conversation with Gulfem Toigar, CEO Amazon Sweden. This is conversations about how to establish US businesses in the Nordics and how Swedish behaviors differs from other countries. This episode is called 1113, Gulfem Toigar, Amazon, e-commerce and Swedish behaviors. Again, thank you for your engagement and have a great day.